We're going to call to order the meeting on the Senate Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. Today is March 26, 2013. We have, we were cutely calling it Ocean Week, but we're going to take care of some sheep first. So we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 719. As we'll have a short explanation of where we've been and what we're doing here, and our administrator, and then I'll take it at...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 719, we heard it on the 12th and then had a short explanation and work session on the 21st. We adopted for the Dash 1 amendment on the 21st, and that sets the minimum assessment at 50 cents per head and prohibits the commission from increasing the Oregon Sheep Commission assessment by more than 10 cents in any 12-month period. And the bill originally had a cap at $1 per head on sheep produced and sold in the state. So we're all ready to go. If you would like to, we have the revenue statement is issued, and it should be in front of you in your packet. And then we also have a fiscal, no fiscal impact on it. And those are the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay. That we've already put in for the bill, correct?
Yes.
So with that, I'll take a motion from Senator Bearsugar.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 719 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bearsugar moves Senate Bill 719 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill passes, and we will have Senator Whitsitt carry the bill. I already talked to him about that. So we're going to close our work session on 719. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 359. A public hearing. Oh, and Senator Close was excused in that last vote. Yep. Senate Bill 359, public hearing, and we'll have a short explanation of the bill. And, yeah, and I guess what I want to say is that we've had a number, an ongoing conversations in a number of these bills that dates back my 8 years, the next group of ocean bills that I've been in the legislature. And a couple of years ago, we actually spent some money and put together a work group that you're going to be hearing from some of the members on to take and look at parts of this. As we were moving forward, this particular bill you're going to hear about right now, one of the conversations that came up with is that the way the state deals with hydroelectric power, whether it's wave or ocean or anything, is the same as they deal with hydroelectric dams. And so all the regulations that go there transfer out to the ocean, which makes no sense. And so we're going to hear a little bit about that and where it came from, and then I'll talk a little bit about what we think is the best solution for that. So with that, we're going to have Jason Bush come up forward. You can do it. And I don't know that it's important to do a whole summary on this bill, just because we're going to talk about where its inceptions were and where we're going to go from here. So, Jason.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Jason Bush. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Wave Energy Trust. Appreciate the opportunity to make some comments today about SB 359. I want to start just very quickly and talk about, while we're having these conversations about ocean energy and the regulatory scheme to cover ocean energy. The Oregon Wave Energy Trust is a private nonprofit that's funded by the Oregon Innovation Council through state lottery dollars for economic development. And over the course of the last 6 years, OWET has been working to advance and promote the responsible development of ocean energy in Oregon. Our board is made up of fishermen, conservation members, companies that want to build ocean energy devices, utility members. What we don't have on our board are any ocean energy developers, per se. That has given us the opportunity to fund the kind of studies that we think promote the responsible development of ocean energy in Oregon, including a variety of environmental studies to help us understand what the potential effects of ocean energy will be once it moves forward. We paid for the state's mapping tool called Oregon Marine Map, which is now available to you online, which tracks all of the data layers that we have accumulated over the last 6 years so that you can have a better view of the ocean and the things that are going on there. there. We also funded all the mapping work that was done for the fishing industry to help the industry understand better, more spatially, where all their hot spots are, and so that we could protect those. That's all part of our support for Goal 19. As part of OWET's work, we have also looked at the regulatory and policy schemes. As we have this nascent industry that's building up here in Oregon, we had the opportunity to look at this process sort of freshly instead of taking the old regulatory schemes that are out there and just assuming that those are the best ways to move forward with ocean energy. We had this opportunity to back up a little bit and look at this process. And that's where 359 came from, the original version of Senate Bill 359. The concept of 359 was pretty simple. Because we have the Territorial Sea Plan, which the state just completed in January, which is a comprehensive regulatory scheme for ocean energy, we have something in place already to regulate ocean energy, and we created that. Beside that, you also have Water Resource Division jurisdiction. Because ocean energy happens in waters of this state and because it's hydroelectric, it was assumed that Water Resources Division had jurisdiction over ocean energy. Of course, we don't dam rivers, we don't kill salmon migrating upstream, we don't have any of those issues at all, and we don't need a water right any more than somebody putting a boat in the water needs a water right. So why were we being regulated by Water Resources Division? In addition, Water Resource has an entire set of regulations that's secondary to the Territorial Sea Plan process, which sets up additional rounds of public hearings and regulatory requirements. We thought that was redundant. It added extra costs both to the state and to the industry, and that we did not need it. However, once we began looking at it, we said, well, look, if Water Resources Division is not regulating ocean energy directly, which state agency does have the authority to and responsibility for regulating ocean energy? And the reality was that we weren't really sure. And so 359, the bill itself, is a little premature until we figure out where we want that responsibility to land. Under the current Territorial Sea Plan approach, the Department of State Lands is treated as the primary regulating agency because they issue the state lease for doing a project, and they become the center of the Territorial Sea Plan JART process, which is the Joint Agency Review Team, where you bring all the agencies to the table and all the stakeholders that would be interested in a project. And DSL sits at the center of that. But certainly the question is out there and it needs to be addressed directly. Is DSL the right home for this? That's why we were very amenable to Chair Roman's recommendation that we take a legislative work group that takes the opportunity during the interim to look more closely at this and come up with a good answer so that we can have a recommendation for the legislature in the next session.
And so to follow up on that a little bit, I just wanted to say that I have talked with Richard Whitman with the governor's office, and they concur that there are a lot of issues that we need to talk about. I've talked to a lot of fishermen others that said maybe this should be housed with DSL, maybe it should be housed with Fish and Wildlife, maybe it should do the Department of Energy. We haven't come on what's the best, and so we're going to try to get people who are interested, who want to be on a work group. And again, we're not going to make a regular task force. It'll be a work group, so it doesn't cost anything. We will ask for a budget note that instructs Department of Energy, and the governor's agreed with that he thinks that they should, to staff it so that we can have some people with some expertise on this issue as part of that. And so I just want to make sure that everybody knew what we were moving forward and how much time and effort had been put in. I appreciate that Jason brought it forward so the conversation could start, because the one thing that has been consistent with the conversations is that everybody agrees somebody needs to do this, and finding the people with the right expertise to do it is really important to all of us. It appears we won't have any wave devices in the water this year, because the one that was going to decided not to, so we've got some time to get it worked out, and I think that's the best course of action to take. So.
Yes, sir.
That's pretty much. Any questions of Jason or anybody else? Yes.
I mean, this question may be relevant or irrelevant, but how far off the coast does Oregon have jurisdiction?
3 miles.
3 miles.
3 miles.
And it's kind of an interesting 3 miles. So.
Okay.
Depends on who's drawing the line.
Yeah.
And in a more informal way, though, because we're adopting a territorial sea plan that we hope to be accepted by the federal agencies that have jurisdiction over things happening in our waters, it also becomes an opportunity for us to use our standards and rules that we've adopted that will be applied outside of the territorial sea plan, or at least taken into consideration by the agencies, the federal agencies that will be permitting projects out there. So it's not required, but they will look at it favorably.
Okay. Yeah, one of the big issues that we had early on was that FERC was giving permits to places because we didn't have a plan, and we wanted to make sure that we did. And then there's a couple different federal agencies that take on after that, so that we have to work with it. But they have always agreed that if you have a plan, the states have a plan, they'll work with us. So that's why it was important to have a plan.
One way to look at this is that it may seem like it's premature, that because there's nobody in the water right now, that we don't need a finely tuned regulatory scheme to address those applications. When in fact we think we should turn that on its head completely, because by getting out in front of these projects, we won't have the problems that you would have with other industries that come along, and you don't learn about the problems until after they start happening. In our case, we've already seen over $10 million of private investment in Oregon, over $18 million of federal money that's come to Oregon for the wave energy industry, and those numbers are only going to grow. We recently had a request for proposals, and there were 11 different companies that applied for OWET money to do research and development in Oregon. So the numbers are growing. It's no longer just about Ocean Power Technologies. It's about a whole host of other companies that are coming up behind OPET and will very much be a part of our future. This really gives us an opportunity to get out in front of that, maximize the natural advantages that Oregon has in terms of the wave resources that we have, while also protecting the many users of the oceans that are already out there and busy making a life right now on the ocean. And we're very cognizant of that and very, very, very precautionary in the approach that we take, and rightly so.
Senator Krasanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is more of a comment. Jason and I had an opportunity to meet in the office, and as we talked, I learned very quickly that we had a lot of things in common. We can speak without in foreign tongue,
that's
both
right.
Being Texans, both being Aggies. So it's really nice to have someone here I can listen to and don't have to interpret.
Translate, huh?
That's a good one.
Yeah. We did.
Any other comments or conversations? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Bush, for being here and for the work you're doing. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
So
the last thing is, I do have to find out. I asked him where he eats his barbecue here in the state. He's given me two places, so I'll report back to the chair.
Okay. That would be good.
Great.
Yeah. So we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 359. And if anybody else in the committee is really interested in being on a work group to follow up on this, let me know. I have some other people who are senators and House members that are interested, but if any of you really want to get into the depth of this, let me know. So we'll pull together a work group.
Do we know if Captain Sensitivity is going to be part of that work group?
I don't know. She may be. We'll see. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 580. And with that, we'll have a short explanation of the bill. And with that, we'll invite Stephen Brandt to the dais.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have the proposed Dash 3 amendment, which replaces the measure. It specifies the role of the Ocean Policy Advisory Council Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee is to make recommendations to OPAC, that's the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, and as resources allow to state agencies on matters relating to ocean or nearshore resources. It also establishes procedures to identify, evaluate, and nominate new scientific and technical advisory committee members, and requires the Scientific Technical Advisory Committee to provide the list of nominees to OPAC. Who then can appoint the new members. We do have revenue and fiscal statements back. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this proposed Dash 3 amendment.
With that, I'll let Dr. Stephen Brandt give his testimony. I should say this is one of the bills that came from that task force that we had a few years ago, and they came up with a lot of recommendations, and one of them was how do we get more scientific knowledge about questions we want answered. And OPAC has a science team, STAC. This bill opens it up so other agencies, including the legislature, could ask STAC to help them make some decisions as long as we send the money with it, because they are really a part of OPAC. And they've been working on how they add new members and do that kind of stuff, and this codifies a lot of that stuff. So thank you for all your work, Stephen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for the invitation to testify in support of Senate Bill 580. My name is Stephen Brandt. I'm currently the director of the Oregon Sea Grant Program, but also the chair of the Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee, commonly referred to as STAC. STAC has two kind of authorizing pieces of legislation. One is regarding OPAC, and it provides that STAC should provide scientific and advice on scientific and research issues related to OPAC's functions on nearshore and ocean issues. And the second is a bill that was in 2009 that added to that responsibility and asked us to advise ODF&W specifically related to marine reserves as they were being developed. STAC originally was formed in 2005 under OPAC. So over the last few years under those authorities, just to give you some idea of what the kind of things that STAC does is that related to the marine reserves, for example, we held something called a size and spacing workshop. The idea is to bring scientific experts in, and they say, how big do marine reserves have to be? How far apart do they need to be from each other? And we produced a report with recommendations on that, and OPAC adopted those recommendations and put them into its guiding principles in deciding where and how many marine reserves should be there. Another example relates to ODF&W in terms of evaluating their monitoring plans for the reserves that were already in place or becoming in place. They put together a monitoring plan. We called together a number of scientists. We evaluated the merit of that plan in terms of what they wanted to do and where they wanted to go, and wrote a report giving them recommendations on how to change that. They took many of those recommendations and modified their monitoring plan accordingly. So those are the kind of things that that STAC does. This particular bill does three very simple things. One is it maintains all of our existing responsibilities to OPAC and to ODF&W and reaffirms that our primary responsibility as originally formed is to OPAC. The second thing, and this is probably the most important new thing it does, is to allow STAC to be that scientific body of expertise to all other state agencies regarding coastal issues. It really broadens our purview so that other state agencies can use us as for scientific advice without having to go through additional legislation in order to give us that authority to do that. The third part of the bill formalizes our appointment procedures on how we appoint individuals to members of STAC. I should say that the members of STAC serve, they're all volunteer. We don't get any compensation on the members of STAC at compensation. They are therefore dedicated. Their faculty members are dedicated for this, and we oftentimes have situations where maybe a STAC member rotates off, or as we get different and new responsibilities, we need to broaden the breadth of the scientific disciplines we cover, or even broaden the depth. And therefore, there's a constant need to keep adding new members to our process. We've outlined an appointment procedure here. That appointment procedure was approved by the OPAC Executive Committee, and it's the appointment procedure we used in 2010 to appoint the latest appointees. There's a five new members in 2010. So what we're doing in this bill is just to formalize that process for any future appointments to the committee. That's a very brief summary, and I appreciate the invitation again, and happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Close.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief one. How many members do you have on the committee?
We have nine members right now.
Nine. Thank you.
And what I would say is this, in the last session when we came with a bill to try to do this, it raised a lot of hackles, and we tried to figure out how do we move forward with this kind of bill, because my feeling has always been that as we start looking at the ocean, the Fish and Wildlife may want to ask some questions of a scientific group. The legislature may want to ask some questions about what's going forward. Having a place available to us, right now the statute only allows the STAC to work for OPAC. We took a time out and let them work with LCDC when they were doing the territorial sea plan. This broadens it to say, if you want to bring the money and ask us the questions, we'll look at from these different agencies and groups to answer their questions and get back information. And it's still a body that's formation is for OPAC, and OPAC will be the body that adds new scientists and does all that kind of stuff, and I'm pleased they came up with this procedure that allows the scientists to recommend people to them. I am excited about having the opportunity to have a scientific advisory committee that we as legislators can use when asking some interesting questions as the time goes forward. And so I had always said in my back of my mind I wanted something like the National Academy of Sciences for Oregon that would answer some of those questions. And I know there's other people who wish that we had a bigger science group for all sorts of questions, but this one solves a problem that I think we have there. And we've vetted it with the Coastal Caucus. They've been in favor of it. We've vetted it with a lot of other people, including the direct people at OPAC, and we feel like we have a pretty good bill with the amendments that are right here. And are there any other questions?
I have one more
sure.
question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a definition of science for your council or committee that includes a statement that the scientific method has to be followed, or do you have a different definition?
We, you know, as scientists, one of the things that we do on all of this is peer review the kind of analysis we do, and that's what we do. So it is following a scientific method, I think, the way you're asking it, but also a peer review. So we'll look at something and bring in experts in the field, whether they're in-state or out-of-state, and evaluate something based on its scientific merit and only its scientific merit or technical merit.
That was really important to all of our OPEC, all the people in Coastal Caucus. That was a very important question. And so we kept coming down to what does the scientific method look like and how does it get there? And we came to the same conclusion that when it's peer-reviewed, you know, you just can't do it one time and think that's the answer. You've got to have empirical data that shows that over time that's the kind of answer you would probably get.
Okay. Thank you.
So any other questions for Dr. Brandt? And again, I want to make sure that we recognize the importance of Sea Grant in our state and what they provide. And they work through Oregon State University, but they are a federal organization that brings scientists and others to bear on a whole lot of our coastal issues. And they have members that are up and down the coast that help us in a lot of different ways. And they have been instrumental in this whole process with OPAC over the years. So again, thank you for that too.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we have the dash ones. We have all the paperwork, and I think we've
dash threes.
So I would I will close the public. Anybody else that wants to speak on 580? Didn't have anybody else lined up. So we're going to close the work session. We're going to, the public hearing, we're going to open a work session on 580, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash three amendments dated 3/20/2013.
Senator Bertschinger moves to adopt the dash three amendments dated 3/20/13. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, could you yes. tell us just what was changed in the dash three?
It basically, Dr. Brandt was talking, it basically codifies what OPAC had already asked them to do with respect to replacing different people. It also gives us the opportunity for people other than OPAC, if you have to bring the money, to ask them questions and they can give you answers back. And what was the final thing? Those are the two biggies.
Those are the two, and then reaffirm what are our commitments to OPAC.
And, right, and we're still, they're still working for OPAC. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. I will carry this one because it's been a long time.
First we've got to pass the bill.
Oh, wait, that was the amendment. Thank you very much. That passed the amendment.
Don't be so
Senator
quick.
Bertschinger, let's go quickly.
All right, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 580 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bertschinger moves the Senate Bill 580 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you. Is there any discussion?
I don't want to stop
that. Okay.
Yeah, we're on a roll.
Is there any opposition?
I'm going to test it now.
It passes, and I will carry this bill. So thank you for keeping me in the right ballpark. Next, we'll close that work session on 580. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 605. And I'm going to hand this over because I want to start with this one. So I will be the one of the people testifying.
And we're open, right?
Yeah. Yep, and we're already open.
Do you want to read the summary?
Sure.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 605 also has an amendment. It's the proposed dash one amendment, which replaces the measure. And it clarifies that the Land Conservation and Development Commission must make findings on the territorial sea plan and amendments to the territorial sea plan or ocean resources management plan if they're recommended by the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. It requires the council to include the commission's revisions in subsequent recommendations for amendments.
So
Could you state your name for the record?
Thank I had you to very say much. That. For the record. I'm Arne Rovland, Senator from Senate District 5. Thank you very much. Many people who live on the coast know clearly and intimately the conversations that have gone on the coast for the last number of years with the reserve issue, with a lot of other things that were going on. One of the big issues was the territorial sea plan. And I think most of us recognized that we had to have a territorial sea plan, i.e., basically mapping out the ocean so that we took control over it as a state, as opposed to the federal government kind of doing what they wanted out there. So we understood that. And we had countless meetings up and down the coast, probably hundreds of meetings, and wore out our fishermen and our other conservationists. All the people up and down the coast got very tired of going to lots of meetings. And in that conversation, we kept moving towards this deadline of having a plan put together and implemented. And the way it was set up is that OPAC specifically was part of the process to gather that information and make recommendations. And as the process went on, there were differences between OPAC and others, and at the end they gave a recommendation that came to LCDC, and there was a hearing in which LCDC had listened to the OPAC recommendation and then listened to some staff recommendations, and they were not the same. And in this particular round, when it was all said and done, the board selected the decision from the staff as opposed to the one from OPAC. That concerned a lot of us who have worked with OPAC. We're not saying OPAC is infallible. We're just saying that we believe that in the past there's never been a decision that was not made and concurred between the two groups. So we talked about that a lot amongst a number of people, and one of the members of OPAC, who's also an attorney, decided that we wanted to figure out how we could put into law how do we put into law exactly what we believe the process should be? And so what you'll see in this amendment is an understanding that our feeling is if they are not going to accept the OPAC recommendation, we want one more step put into place. And that step would be that whatever the staff recommendation is, they would send that back, or whatever decision they think they want to move towards, they would send that back to OPAC to consider that and the reasons for it. And then OPAC would have one more attempt to say, here's why we think this is a better plan, whichever what they came up. They could modify their own. They could say, okay, we understand why you want to do this, and they could send back the one that came from the staff or the one that the OPAC had decided. So what this bill says is that that next process will happen. It will go back. OPAC can look that over and then send back a new recommendation, but at the same time, so that it doesn't get into a cycle that never can end, they will also send back the recommendation that was sent to them from the board. And at the end, they get to decide which one of those two they want to take. But at least it gives one more opportunity for OPAC to chime in and explain why they believed, from their research, that their decision was either better or that after hearing what the other recommendations were, why they changed theirs. And at the end of the day, that will end the problem. But we believe that that was a reasonable request, and so we chose to take this bill and then put this new amendment in that basically does that. And I think it helps make sure that the people who we've actually asked to be on boards like OPAC and others to make decisions get to have the feeling that people are actually listening to what they're doing and giving them the respect to go back and have them look at it one more time. And Oregon has run on public involvement in most of our commissions and boards, and I think that's important here as well.
Okay. Any questions?
And I know we just got this amendment, so I'm going to probably hold this over till Thursday so people can out there can see it, because I think it only came out shortly today with all the other stuff. So I just wanted to feel like it was important that we let people have a chance to look it over and make sure it's doing exactly what we anticipated it would do.
Okay. Well, thank you, Senator Roblin. And Joe, you're up.
Good.
Chairman Butcher, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I live in Walport, and I represent Seafood Oregon. And Seafood Oregon is a coalition of the four ocean fishing commodity commissions. We self-assess ourselves, and then we have money for marketing and things like that. And recently they added me to their system. And I'm the person that has to try to interpret this stuff and then translate it to fishermen. I'm a fisherman. I've been a fisherman since I was 2 years old. But sometimes I don't completely understand this stuff still. By the way, the four commodity commissions are the Dungeness Crab Commission, the Oregon Trawl Commission, which is also pink shrimp, the Oregon Albacore Commission, and the Oregon Salmon Commission. So basically, we're the guys that have been here for 150 years harvesting fish on the ocean. And several years ago, when all of a sudden we found out that we were asked to adjust the way we fish because other people felt that they wanted to come in and do other things in the area that we've been fishing for a long time. And so marine reserves were one of the things. But as in the process of talking about marine reserves, several very smart members of the legislature came up with this idea of OPAC. And the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee is something that, surprisingly enough, us fishermen have learned to deal with, and we like that process. And we were somewhat concerned with what happened at LCDC. And we think this bill brings us back into the point where fishermen can interface with OPAC, and then OPAC can work with DLCD. But the recommendations or the final say still has to come back and be framed in a way that fishermen agree with and that fishermen understand. So I will continue the conversation on this with my clients and with you, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Any questions? I just have one. When we sell off the boat albacore tuna, we know what it is. I didn't like the advertising that they checked food markets and found that some of it was not tuna. And I just wanted to make sure that your people do the right things. And we have great tuna out there.
Senator Roblin, actually, the Albacore Commission and the Salmon Commission had a discussion yesterday about there's a fish called escalar, which is one of those things that we all used to catch and just throw overboard because it was kind of mushy. But it looks a little, the meat looks a little bit like albacore, and it's being sold now as albacore. And, you know, we all as fishermen, as I say, we self-assess ourselves, and we're very, very cognizant of branding our product. We make a lot more money from our product now as a percentage of the retail value than we used to. And it's because we've branded our commodity, and we need to protect that. And so we're very concerned about things coming in the market. And I've been with the captain when we were at a seafood restaurant that served us the wrong kind of captain, wrong kind of food. It was a different bottom fish than Representative Thompson thought was on the menu, and he was very nice about correcting the folks.
He was sensitive to their...
He was very sensitive, yes. Thank you.
That's kind of sensitivity.
Thank you. And we're going to take this bill and move the work session over to Thursday, and any other comments and stuff between then. And if there are people that really want to talk, we can have them talk in the work session if there's anything that comes up. So we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 605. I do want to say we have the pleasure of having a past representative here, and Paul Hanneman, who is also a dorryman and a fisherman from Pacific City, which I, you know, if you haven't been to Pacific City and watched the dories come in or go out, you have missed a real integral part of what being an Oregonian on the coast is all about.
And or the Pelican Pub.
Or the Pelican Pub. And they have a great feast in the summer where you can go and have fish that's been caught that day and fried in the parking lot of the Pelican Pub just across the street. And you can see the representative and fishermen out there working with everybody else to make that happen. So it's a pretty amazing community event on the coast. So thank you for being here. So with that, I think we've covered all the bills that we were going to deal with today. We had a little bit more time because there were a whole lot of people. We've had these bills come up before, and they took a lot of time. And I think we've worked really hard to get to the place where people are now accepting it, and I'm really excited about that. So, anything else for anybody?
Mr. Yes. Chair, may I be allowed to vote on Senate Bill 719?
Yeah, we have to
do a motion.
Motion to, do you want to make a motion to accept? I guess it's to suspend the rules to allow.
Suspend the rules first, yeah.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, I make a motion to suspend the rules.
So that's under.
So that for the purpose of Senator close the vote on Senate Bill 719.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Senator Bradshaw makes the motion to suspend the rules for the purpose.
I don't know. How's she going to vote?
For the purpose of allowing Senator close to vote. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Close, how do you vote?
I vote aye. Thank you
she
very
votes
much.
Aye. Thank you. Thank you very much for that, and thanks for asking. So that's a good thing. So is there any other things to be brought forward today? Seeing none, we're going to close the hearing today for the Senate Rural Communities and Economic Development. Thank you.